This new year, you've got goals, and Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of them. Save time and have the energy you need to tackle everything on your to-do list with Factor's ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. No food prep, just microwave in 2 minutes, and you're good to go. Get Factor and not only skip the trip to the grocery store or the hassle of ordering for home delivery, skip the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. I've been a Factor customer for a year. I buy these meals regardless of whether they sponsor this show, and they got me through the holidays. I had the fuel and the healthy meals that I needed for energy and weight maintenance with all the tempting treats at all the Christmas gatherings that I went to. So no matter what your lifestyle or what the season, Factor has the meals to help you live it to the fullest with keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, and protein plus meals on the menu each week. They're prepared by chefs approved by dietitians. Each meal has all the ingredients you need to feel satisfied all day long. The key to that is quality ingredients packed with nutrients, not empty calories. And that's what Factor meals are all about. And that is why I am a regular consumer of Factor meals. I am big on nutrient density food and skipping empty calories. That means no white flour, no refined sugars, no artificial ingredients. All the best kinds of protein, carbs, and fats that are packed with the nutrients that give you energy and make you feel satisfied so you're not tempted to snack and thus gain weight and then feel dragged down after that sugar spike. With 34 chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options, there's always something new to try. Plus, you can round out your meal and replenish your snack supply with an assortment of over 36 quick bites, smoothies, juices, and other satisfying add-ons. If you're looking to cut back on takeout, Factor is a great option. Not only is Factor cheaper than takeout, but meals are ready quicker than restaurant delivery. When you're hungry and you've got time to eat, you're 2 minutes away with Factor. Eating vegan or veggie is a snap with Factor, and you know that's important for me. Each meal is prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians, so you know your Factor meal has all the ingredients you want and nothing you don't. And if you're looking to mix it up, you can add additional protein to select vegan and veggie meals each week. So get Factor and enjoy clean eating without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Again, ready in just 2 minutes. There's really no easier way to eat well. Achieve and maintain your goals this new year with Factor. Get America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit and start saving time, eating well, and living your best year ever. So head to go.factor75.com/Wade and use code Wade60 to get 60% off your first box. That's code Wade60 at go.factor75.com/Wade60 to get 60% off your first box. Go.factor75.com/Wade60.
Hello, wrestling fans. You are listening to Wrestling Coast to Coast, a Pro Wrestling Torch daily cast focusing on independent wrestling. I'm Chris Maitland, and joining me in this adventure is the man, the myth, the McClelland, Justin McClelland. Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I know you for a long time, and I know that this has been a big week for you. Traditionally, this week is a big week for you. You want to tell the folks why that is?
It's true. I think, so the loves of my life, even predating wrestling, are the Academy Awards. I've been a huge nerd about them for as long as I can remember. It used to be just because, like, well, I like to follow the winners and losers, but when I was a little kid and I couldn't see a lot of movies, you could see clips of the movies during the Oscars, which I always thought was exciting. Now they actually don't show very many clips, but I can watch all the movies. So it's, you know, a zero-sum kind of thing. I was very excited by this year's nominations. Most of them, there were bucking the usual Academy trend. They actually picked several movies that made a lot of money, like Top Gun Maverick, which is a very fun movie. Everything Everywhere All at Once, I thought was a great movie. That's probably my favorite of the Best Picture nominations. It's a sci-fi movie with sort of a twist. It actually turns into like a family drama that was really good. I really like The Fabelmans, which is Steven Spielberg's reminiscence on his life. I thought it was really well lived in, very good. unfortunately, like, one of the big favorites is The Banshees of Inisherin, which I did not like at all. I could not stand that movie. I don't understand why a lot of people like it so much, but it's drawn a lot of praise, and that's the one I didn't get. I've seen 6 of the 10, so I still some out there I gotta watch, which is always exciting for me. Now I'm on a mission, so yeah, big deal. Have you seen any of the Oscar nominees, Chris?
I have not. My wife always watches the Best Picture nominees. Can sometimes get to some of the actor and actresses as well. And usually I have a tradition around this time as well, which is when I look at all the movies. Sometimes I consult you and see which ones that I want to watch, which ones I don't want to watch. Yeah. I wanted to watch Top Gun anyway, so I'll probably watch that one. The Banshees is going to definitely be a no after your description. And I'm not watching Avatar because it's 3 hours long.
Sure. Several of them are pretty long. Although,
oh, really? Are they?
Avatar takes the cake.
Well, I'll have to keep you all updated on what movies I do and do not watch. And we will, I think we did this last year around the Oscars. You gave your predictions. So
yes,
we will do that close to Oscar time. The Oscars are March 12th. Do I have that correct?
Actually, I don't know. I think so. Yeah. Yes, March 12th.
That's right.
Fun fact, Chris's wife and I first bonded over our shared love of Academy Awards.
Yes. I know you frequently talk about it, and I, as I said, I will watch probably, you know, 4 or 5 of the movies, depending on the descriptions and how difficult they are to find. One thing that's easy now, you can watch a lot of movies on streaming. There was one another word for movies, at least used to be back in the day, if you're going to go to the theater. It's called Reels. And Reels is a channel that made news in the wrestling world this week as MLW announced that their new showcase program, MLW Underground Wrestling, will premiere on Reels. And it'll premiere with their first episode on Tuesday, February 7th, with a main event of Hammerstone versus EJ and Duka in a last man standing match for the MLW world title. And Justin, what are your thoughts on MLW going to Reels?
I was excited about this for a couple reasons. Just, I think anytime you can get more exposure, that's good. Reels is not a super high profile channel, although I do have it on my cable system. They're a lot like Vice. Like, they have a lot of, like, sort of, how to describe this? A lot of, like, dark side of Hollywood, you know, tawdry shows, maybe. You know, like, Vice has Dark Side of the Ring. There was, like, pretty sure I watched, like, The Last Days of Elvis on Reels, which was fascinating. I'm not quite sure how MLW fits into that. But I'm excited they are getting exposure. They're going, like you said, they're going to do a 2-hour block every Tuesday, 1 hour at 10 o'clock after NXT will be original programming. And then they'll do like a classic MLW matches after that, which is good because there's a lot of MLW I've never watched. So I think, you know, a chance to broaden my horizon some. And even if I don't watch that part, just a show I could watch every week that's just an hour is more enticing than 2 hours. It's just like a psychological thing, you know, like, oh, it's only an hour. I can fit that in anywhere. I'm excited. I wish them well. I hope to check it out starting February 7th. And I think we'll probably talk about it, if not the first week, because we already have some busy things doing that week, that we will get to it probably within the month of February to talk about it some.
Yes, I'm sure that we will. Always check a press release, especially in wrestling, to see which wrestlers get named. MLW mentions that they have a electrifying mix of world-class fighters, including MLW World Champion Alex Hammerstone, the Certified G, Real One, Women's Featherweight Champion Ty Valkyrie, John Hennigan, known as John Morrison to most of you, Jacob
Fatu. Shouldn't he be like Johnny MLW there or something?
He could be.
Johnny Major, I guess.
Johnny Majors was head coach of Pitt's last national championship of football.
Yeah.
1976. Jacob Fatu and the world's greatest wonder, Microman. It does mention on the first show that the real one, the Boomerang Fight Club and Mance Warner will be on that show. It also, the press release mentions that they will keep their show, MLW Fusion, which is currently on Pro Wrestling TV streaming app that we reviewed a few weeks ago. So you'll see the synergy between those two shows. This Reels is available in about 40 million homes across the United States. So obviously better distribution than the Pro Wrestling TV. And we will take a look at this show, MLW Underground, which will debut at 10 o'clock Eastern on February 7th, followed by a classic episode at 11 o'clock Eastern.
2 weeks from, well, like 10 days from now, depending on when you're listening to this.
Yes.
DailyCast listeners, thank you, first of all, for streaming the shows. Be sure you're subscribing. Just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to pro wrestling podcasts. But while you're at it, if you're not yet, please subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows. Search Wade Keller and see two logos pop up, a blue one and a red one. The red logo, the post shows, cover Raw and SmackDown each week with a fast turnaround time of a couple hours after the shows end. And also, every Saturday, we present a flashback to our analysis from 5 years ago that week, covering Raw. Jason Palwa from ProWrestling.net joins me, and we analyze what happened on Raw 5 years ago. So check out that time capsule every weekend. The Blue Logo Show features the Thursday flagship, plus our first-run interviews, our classic interviews, and our mailbag segments. So, again, search Wade Keller and click subscribe to both the red logo and the blue logo.
We, this week, are going to talk about Prestige Wrestling Any Given Saturday. But before we get to that, we had the honor and privilege of talking to a new tag team that will be debuting on a live edition of NWA Power, which will be on January 31st, 6:05 on YouTube. We will be reviewing that episode on our show next week. But Justin and I were very happy to be joined by Psycho Love, which is a team of Psycho Boy Fodder and Angelina Love. So before we go to talk about Prestige Wrestling, here is our interview with them talking about their career journey so far and their match against Camille and Tom Latimer on January 31st. And we're here on Pro Wrestling Torch DailyCast, Wrestling Coast to Coast. And we are very excited to be joined by a team that will be having their first match at the live NWA Power taking place on January 31st. That is Psycho Love, Angelina Love, and Psycho Boy Fodder. How are you guys doing?
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
We are doing pretty well. I think the first question that we should start off with, that you are making your debut as a team coming up at NWA Power. Why have you decided to team together for the first time?
Because we're both crazy about each other.
We just, you know, it's something that everything with us so far has just come together so easily. And when we talked about this, it just seemed to fit. And we tried it and filmed it and sent it to Billy, and he loved it and was like, we're going to go in this direction. And that works perfectly for us. So.
So, I mean, are you excited? Any nerves or just ready to go?
Oh, I'm ready to go. I mean, you know, I mean, I think we pretty much got what we do down, and we're ready to display that when we get in the ring with Latimer and Camille.
I don't get nervous anymore, which is a good thing. You'd think I wouldn't after time, but we're looking forward to it. You know, I haven't done any, well, neither of us have done any Knoxville shows for NWA yet. So we're excited to be able to go down there and be a part of this big live. You know, they're really hyping it up. It'll be a big show. So, you know, and we got Camille and Tom, and I think it's going to be it's a pretty stacked match.
And as we should mention, that you will be wrestling Tom Latimer and Camille. They refer to themselves as the
NWA power couple. They've been together in the NWA for quite some time. Is this is your goal or your idea that if you're going to start a team together, you're going to go right to the top?
That's always the goal. You don't. You we ain't doing it to go to the bottom.
That's right. Well, it'll be a changing of the guard when we show up.
So what are your goals in the NWA?
Well, I mean, I think for me, just starting off, is just get my feet planted and get my feet wet and work a lot of the guys there and just kind of build a catalog within the company. And then as things progress, then, you know, you're always chasing titles and chasing accolades as your career moves on. So, you know, I'm just getting started there. I mean, I've worked a lot of places. I've worked a lot of guys. But I'm excited to work with the NWA. I mean, Billy offers a great platform and, you know, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to kick it off and get it going January 31st at the NWA Power Live.
Yeah. And I, you know, 8-time champ sounds good to me down the line somewhere, maybe this year, but, you know, like just doing like the mixed tags and being a couple and like, we're really excited to be working together. And, we knew NWA would be like the perfect place to be doing it. So, yeah, I mean, I've been having matches there and he's had some matches there as well. And, you know, it was like when we started the Beautiful People in TNA, it was like, you know, people just kind of come in as they come in and then it's like, you find your thing that you do. And I think this will be that for us.
As you mentioned before, this is a special show for the NWA. It is a live taping of NWA Power. It'll be live on YouTube at 6:05 and archived for those of us who cannot stay away from our kids at that time. We'll watch it later. And we will be reviewing that show here on Wrestling Coast to Coast the week after. So how excited are you all to be part of the show? Is there any extra nerves or any sort of focus because it's such a big show for the NWA, a kind of new frontier for this version?
No nerves. We want to be on the big shows. You know what I mean? So, and with, once again, with us just debuting, this, gimmick for us, you know, we want to be doing it on the big show and getting it out there. And we got big plans for this match. You just have to wait and see.
Yeah. I think everybody will be thrilled with the match, when it's over with, and you know, with the NWA progressing the way it is, you know, and there's going to be a lot more live shows in the future, to be a part of the first one, you know, is definitely an honor and definitely a feather that we can put in our cap that we made our debut at their first ever live show. So I think it's absolutely fantastic.
So Angelina, you've wrestled practically everywhere in the U.S. and abroad. What do you find unique about working in the NWA?
Well, it's got more of that old school feel, you know. It was like WWE and like Impact kind of had the same feel. And then Ring of Honor was like way different because it was like, they just seemed to have a completely different fan base, you know, that just seemed like the girls were kind of different, loved the Japanese wrestling and loved the guy. It just seemed like the crowd and, what they liked the most was different from like your typical like TNA. I still say TNA Impact crowd or WWE crowd, you know, and NWA has like that really old school feel, which I like. And like when I first went into the locker room, it was like, there were old people. I was with Deep South. I was like, they were in the locker room and I haven't seen them in years, and people I was with Impact and Ring of Honor. So it was like everybody that I had worked with over the course of my career, there was like some people in the locker room, which I thought was really cool. And then Velvet, obviously, you know, we get to work together again, which is always fun. So yeah, it's great. It's really relaxed too. It's very laid back. Billy's super cool. You know, like everyone's just there to get the job done, make money, make it great. So I like it.
I should ask, Angelina, if you and Velvet are going to be doing any more of your special episodes of NWA Power. I know you've done a couple of those that were
like the Velvet After Dark.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm probably.
Give yourself a reason to look forward to going to the mailbox each week with a PW Torch newsletter paper copy subscription. Details at pwtorch.com/papercopy. It's 12 pages every week, packed with my TV reports, along with exclusive features such as my cover story on the top story of the week, our pay-per-view roundtable reviews from the Torch staff, exclusive feature-length columns from Greg Parks, Rich Fan, Sean Radican, Alan Cunahan, and Zach Haydorn, Torch Talk transcripts, the latest news, and more. pwtorch.com/papercopy. Take a break from screen time and settle in every week with a mega dose of wrestling news and analysis with a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, paper copy edition, in the year 2022. You can get a full year of home delivery for just $99. Or try us for an 8-week trial subscription. pwtorch.com/papercopy.
Next question, you did reference Ring of Honor, and prior to us becoming a show focused on independent wrestling, we were the Ring of Honor podcast for the Torch. And I actually was at the debut of the Beautiful People at the show between Ring of Honor and New Japan, G1 Supercard. Mm-hmm. Justin and I were both at Final Battle 2021, as you both were as well. Can you just tell us about your experiences there? I know it was a very emotional show for a lot of reasons, but can you tell us about your experiences at Final Battle 2021? 2021, yes.
Yeah, 2021. Yeah.
Why does that feel like that was last year? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
God, it doesn't feel like that long ago. Holy, that's crazy. Yeah. So for me, the Ring of Honor story in my career is like a total full circle thing, because that was like the first major company that I made appearances for back in like 04. So I kind of like did a few appearances for Ring of Honor in 04 when I was in the embassy. And then I got hired by WWE Developmental. And then I kind of just went off and then went to Impact from there. So there was kind of like a 15-year turnaround, because then I went back to Ring of Honor in 2019 when we debuted at MSG. So it was very cool. It was like this very full circle thing for me. So I liked being back there. It was like, when you're in wrestling and you've worked for so long, you kind of feel like you know everybody, but I felt like I didn't even know like half the Ring of Honor roster. So it was like all these new people to meet. It's just a little different atmosphere with like the fans kind of liking a different style of wrestling and stuff. So, but I mean, like what we were doing was really fun. COVID hit pretty fast and changed a lot of things, but like it was always really, really fun working there. It was like great people on that roster too. Like it was a very like kind of family feel backstage. And Final Battle, it was like we didn't want it to be Final Battle because it was so, the crowd was so good and there was so much energy, and it was like, that's like what Ring of Honor shows are like, you know? So we just wanted to like kind of ride that momentum into 2022 and keep going. But
yeah,
things happened.
Crazy. And then when we did the run-in at the end of the EC3 match, I mean, that whole lead up to that pay-per-view was crazy, because like I was getting texts from, and I had been working with EC3 and Adam on the Control Your Narrative stuff, and you know, doing a lot of indies. But that whole period leading up, like nobody really knew if that was even gonna happen until about 3 days beforehand. And then they flew Adam in and they hit him, and he was like in a hotel room with us. And then we had to take different cars, like to the venue. And then they had us walled off in like a room, like upstairs, so like nobody could leak it out or whatever. And, yeah, I mean, that was a wild experience, you know. And it kind of, you know, it sucks that it ended right when it did, because, you know, that could have been something too, you know, for Adam coming into Ring of Honor, and Weston Blake and me, and, you know, EC3. And, you know, we felt like a lot of stuff could have been built out of that into some programs in Ring of Honor too. But, you know, I mean, the whole day was fantastic.
So you did also, Angelina, you referenced working during the COVID era. What was it like working in the empty arenas?
I thought it would be a lot more weird than it was, honestly. It just kind of felt like having matches at training class, but there was like a big production, big TV production going on. Very low, I mean, zero pressure, because there was no people. So like, it, you know, if things happened in matches that we were filming that you needed to do again, or if the finish wasn't quite what it was supposed to be, then we would just stop. you stop and you just start again and get it right. So everybody was able to have like perfect matches by the, like, you know, at the end of the day and whatever was shown on TV and, you know, YouTube and stuff like that. Cause you could just stop and start as you please. So, I mean, it's weird because, you know, we live for doing things in front of crowds. So like the energy is different cause there's nobody to really feed off of. But for me, it just seemed like I got so used to it. So then when we did like a pay-per-view in Philly and had people back, everybody was like, oh my God, like extra pressure, even though it's like, everybody's been, that's all we do is perform in front of people, but then you just get used to not doing it and then going back to it. But yeah, it was, I mean, everybody just did what we could and that's all we could do.
You could always blame the dead crowd too, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've said on our show several times, which I know a lot of people, they sound, I think it's weird, but I was a big fan of the pandemic era Ring of Honor. It's actually how I ended up getting into this because I started writing reports. So I will say publicly here on how much I enjoyed it, as folks listening to the show know.
Thank you. I mean, I think we all killed it.
Yeah, it was really good shows, really good storylines. It's why I went to, I wasn't really traveling at the time. My wife was 7 months pregnant, but had to be there for Final Battle. So we flew down there to see that. So we were very excited.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
We were able to do that. Can you kind of talk about Psycho Warrior? As you said, you've been in the indies just last couple of years. Can you just talk about, you know, how you connected with the Control Your Narrative folks and kind of your entrance in with them?
Yeah, so kind of weird. So like prior to me getting into wrestling, all I did was competitive bodybuilding shows. And I run 4 different supplement companies outside of the wrestling. And I've always been a huge wrestling fan since I was a child, but I would kind of be into it and then out of it, like as an adult. And I started doing like a little bit of training just on the side, just kind of like as a hobby type thing. And then just randomly, like one day on one of my businesses, I got a direct message from some guy with a blue check named EC3 asking me about a listing with a supplement facts panel that I just forgot to put on the website. And I went to his page and it said like WWE superstar or whatever. So I just told him to message my personal page and we kind of connected like that. So it was just like a total random thing. And then when EC3 got released from WWE and he shot that first like garage car fight type scene or whatever, where they had like the cars hanging in there and it was like a street fight type thing with the wrestling ring. I was the guy that they used in that to kind of do the bumping around for EC3. So like randomly, like one day on a Wednesday, he just sent me a message and said like, hey, can you be here on Saturday? I want to use you for like this wrestling thing that I'm doing. And I went down and we did that. And then from there, I think my eyes kind of opened up because, you know, I was doing the training and stuff for wrestling more as a hobby. But everybody was telling me like, you have the look, you have the body, you just need to learn how to wrestle and you're gonna go places. So I started taking it a lot more serious. I started training with guys like Matt Sydal and Lodi, CW Anderson. And I went from going like one time a week to going like 3-4 times a week every week. And after that, EC3 used me in a bunch of the, like the first, Free the Narrative film. I worked John Schuyler in that one. The second one I worked, Weston Blake, I worked Jake Logan. And then like right after that, we did the Ring of Honor run in, and then AEW called me a week later and had me do a bunch of the, like the elevations and the darks and all that. And following that, I think like my plan was to just work guys that were really good. I know now for sure that like you can't get better like working guys that are at your level. Like you have to work guys that are way better than you so you can learn. So through EC3, I met so many guys that were, you know, working for companies like AEW and Impact and Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor had just shut down. So there were like so many good guys over there at Ring of Honor that were great wrestlers. That I just contacted who I had met through EC3 and I would just bring them in myself. So like I would work with the promoters, bring in a guy that I knew, like a Josh Woods, and Josh Woods, I would fly him in. pay him his rate. He would work me. And I got to work the guy with the name. I got the footage of the match. And then I got the experience of working with the TV guy. And I just, like so many guys, like Woods and Weston Blake and Moose, Ace Austin. I mean, there's just countless matches like on my YouTube. And throughout the year, last year, it just kind of got crazier and crazier. I mean, I was working, you know, 2-3 matches a week, every week, on the indies. And I think that's just really how you build your skill set. So then I got like Ricky Morton. I love Ricky Morton. He's so great. Him and his son, Ricky actually got me to NWA. Him and Johnny Swinger and EC3, they put in a lot of work and a lot of co-signing for me to be there. And then, you know, once you're there, you just have to deliver. So I delivered. They liked what they saw. And then, you know, now we're here. You know, we got a good character base and gimmick going. And I think it's going to prove very fruitful in the future.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
So I was telling Chris today, looking, I thought for a guy named Psycho Boy, you had a pretty uplifting Twitter page. So is that like a positive attitude you is that like a philosophy you keep to like help you succeed?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, for sure, man. Sorry, I'm a little under the weather, but you know, I mean, outside of the wrestling and outside of the character, you know, like my whole life revolves around like fitness and supplements. You know, that's what my, you know, business is. That's how I make my money. And you know, I want everybody like to succeed, man. And you know, part of succeeding is like investing in yourself and believing in yourself. And like, you know, far too often, like we see on, you know, things like Twitter or things like Instagram, and like everybody's just putting each other down. That's all they do is just make snide comments. Nothing's ever good enough. You know, a guy can lose 100 pounds, but he didn't lose 105 pounds, you know, so it's just a lot of negativity out there. And I think that, you know, as a person, or at least me, I'm just one person. But if I can be positive, you know, that might have an effect on somebody else.
So then what's the, I guess for those who don't know, what's the Psycho Boy character like?
The Psycho Boy character is just somebody who's like totally fearless, right? So like if you get hit, it doesn't matter if you get hit, you're just going to keep coming, right? So if you watch a lot of, like, if you really want to see like the true Psycho Boy character in action, go to my YouTube and watch me versus Moose when he was the Impact World Champion. That will completely encompass the Psycho Boy character. I mean, we ran like just so many like simple but cool spots where like Moose would do something to me and I would just get right up and just mush him in the face and ask for more. Or he would hit me with some, I mean, Moose can chop too, man. Like, he hit me with some vicious chops in that match, and it's more just asking for more. Like, you know, is that all you got? And not letting anybody put you down. Like, they really got to put you down, for you to take the loss.
That's my favorite match of his and Moose's. Yeah. You got to check it out on YouTube.
You mentioned a lot of other people that you've learned from, but what have you learned from teaming with a wrestling legend, Angelina Love?
Oh, I mean, gosh, so much, man. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the car together, spent a lot of time here at the house together. Just more, I think more promo stuff than anything else, man. Cause I've always just despised doing promos. Like, I can get on here and I can talk to you. I can do videos talking about supplements, like no problems, but like getting into character and like just cutting a promo, it's never been my strong suit. And I actually had requested that, like, I do no talking and she does all the talking, but you can't do that forever. And that's just part of growing, right? As you do this, you know, the same way you get in the ring and, you know, you got happy feet and you got to learn how to get rid of those and just get better. And it's just kind of like overcoming fear, but, you know, working on promos and then also, not necessarily like structuring matches, but just things that you can add into matches like dips and things like that to make it better. So,
I'm his agent. Let's be
real. Yeah, there you go. She's totally my agent, putting all the matches together and, you know, helping me out in that aspect.
Well, you know, like
taking 10% too. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. It might be taking more than that.
Well, it's like, for me, he can do the moves, you know, like that was always something that I was always taught. It's very easy to teach people how to do wrestling moves. You can learn how to do moves fairly quickly, but it's like the in-between stuff. And, you know, for me and like what Velvet and I did, it was like very character driven. And I, you know, we were just talking about this too, how I used to like be scared to death of talking in front of people. And now like, I'll do it all day long. Like, so do that over wrestling any day. So I, and I like to come up with ideas for other people. So like when I see his stuff, I'm like, ooh, like what about this here? And like, you know, switching gears here and adding your psycho thing in here and like promos, like, you know, elongating some words or really putting some oomph behind something specific that you say to like really make it stand out to people. And as you can see how I do interviews, like I'm so animated. That's just how I am. So we just like to sit and watch like wrestling together too. And just learn and laugh and think of ideas and think of things for ourselves, because this is very new for us too. So I mean, there's really a lot to go with going forward with this for sure.
I mean, not to get too mushy now, but where did you guys meet?
NWA.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just saw her in the hallway one day and I was just like, you come here, you're mine now. And that was it.
I'm sure. Sure, it was that simple.
After that, we were just kind of, honestly,
that was on a Monday and yeah. The first time we hung out was Wednesday. So,
yeah. And then after that, I mean, we just never stopped hanging out. So, it just kind of led to, you know, where we're at today and doing the gimmick thing and hanging out all the time.
It feels like we've been together 10 times longer than we have been.
Oh,
we're just,
sure.
We're just, yeah, we have so many similarities in like our sense of humor and our personality and the things that we like, and we're both goofy and, you know, it's just, everything's really, it's just easy, really easy, which we both like very much.
I should ask, a few minutes left, a kind of general women's wrestling question. Obviously, I did refer to Angelina Love as a wrestling legend because you are. And one of the reasons why is because of a lot of the work that the Beautiful People did in TNA Impact for women's wrestling. You know, now women's wrestling is looked at maybe more prominently than it was back then, but it doesn't mean that there weren't, you know, great pioneers all around the United States who were putting women's wrestling forward. How do you feel seeing the growth that women's wrestling has taken place over the last several years?
Well, I think it's great. You know, because like we are just as passionate about it as the men are, you know, and the knockouts, you know, back in 08, when we were starting the division and stuff, like we were just dead set on, just proving ourselves. Cause it really was a sink or swim thing. It was like, we're going to try this women's division. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And, you know, we were going to make it work. So to be part of starting that is something that I'll always be able to have, which is great. And then, I mean, like, gosh, they've had girls main event WrestleMania, like you've never seen or heard of that before. So I think, it took a while, but it's a male dominated business, you know, it always has been. But just, you know, we just saw, it just grew to that and everybody was given more opportunity. And once you see the reaction to it, and how the people, what's the word I'm looking for? How the people just like take it in and react to it and stuff. It's like everything was really positive. And then you can really just see what the girls can do. Then you can really just like what Vince did with Velvet and I, you know, he just gave us the ball and let us run with it. And a lot of times we can run with it and make things work. You just gotta be given the opportunity. So, the opportunities are definitely there. And I think that it's very prominent now and it's great. It's great to see.
So, are there for both of you, who are some like bucket list wrestlers you would like to face in the near future?
Ooh.
I mean, I always say Trish, because I feel like the Toronto versus Toronto thing would be great. You know, Victoria was one of my bucket lists, but the second she left WWE and came to TNA, I was her first program. So, yeah, I always say Trish. That'd be dope. Trish.
And for me, I always say Matt Hardy and Jeff Jarrett. I mean, they're just, Matt Hardy's from my backyard. I'm from North Carolina. So, he's been around forever. And Jeff Jarrett, I mean, he's just one of the best workers of all time, man. I mean, the guy's got an unbelievable punch. So I would love to work with either of those fellas.
I've got to ask one non-wrestling question, because I know people are going to be listening after what you just said, because you said you are from the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So do you root for Duke or for the University of North Carolina Tar Heels?
Duke, man, all day. Duke all day. It's too many. There's too many like UNC fans in North Carolina, man. They're everywhere, man. The Duke fans, I mean, I think North Carolina is like 70-30, like 70 UNC, 30 Duke. So I like to always go with the latter, man. That's not super popular.
Support us on Patreon starting at $4.99. Get these shows ad-free and bonus VIP content. That's $4.99 on Patreon. Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That's Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That is the quickest, cheapest, and easiest way to support us and enjoy these shows with a streamlined listening experience. The Wade Keller post shows, podcasts, and the PW Torch daily casts, plus some random VIP bonus content.
Well, a good friend of ours here on the Torch, his wife, went to Duke, is a very, very, very big supporter of Duke. So I'm sure she might be listening, very happy to hear that.
Good choice, babe. Good choice.
Go Duke. Yeah.
There you go. So we may have people who listen to like North Carolina, and don't hold that against them, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn the TV off when the match comes on. Duke fan. I'm out of here.
So before we wrap up, for real, Justin, do you have any more questions?
Wrestling Ricky Morton, have you taken the Destroyer from Ricky Morton?
I did not take the Destroyer from Ricky Morton. I worked him, that December in 2021 was just like, it kind of like really got the catapult going for me, because like we did the Ring of Honor thing, and then like AEW hit me up right after that, and I did like Elevation, and then the week after that I wrestled Ricky Morton, man, which was like growing up, like watching Ricky Morton, like Ricky Morton is like one of my heroes, man. So and it's so it's so crazy, man. Like I'll get like texts on my phone and they'll say like Ricky Morton's like texting you, you know, and it's just like that's like just surreal, man. Any of these guys, like him, like Lodi, like I got a picture of that I posted up, a picture of me and Lodi when I was like 12 at like a WCW sign-in, and Lodi ended up helping train me and all that, man. So it's just crazy how like life kind of comes full circle. And, you know, I didn't even start wrestling until I was 33. So I haven't been doing this like super long. I've been working matches since August 2020. But if I could ever take the Destroyer from Ricky Morton, I would do it, and I would do it with a smile on my face.
Yeah. And Ricky Morton's great. Now, in my house, we used to watch Saturday night, 6:05 TBS. And I used to love the Rock and Roll Express. And I've grown a lot since then, but Ricky Morton looks almost the same.
He looks the same. I know.
I was just a little kid, and to imagine him doing the Destroyer now is really cool to see.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ricky's great, man. And he's got so many like just great stories. He's just such a cool, humble dude. And, you know, his son's a good dude too, man. And I mean, they're good friends.
Oh my gosh. Carrie's ridiculously nice. Like, and so is Ricky, you know what I mean? Like he's just so outgoing and, like just one of the nicest people. And yeah, he still looks the same, and he's still everywhere.
I know we covered
everywhere.
He was main eventing a show we covered a couple of weeks ago in freelance wrestling in Illinois. He was in the main event. So.
And he did a GCW show we're going to cover too.
I saw the clips from that freelance wrestling, and it would look like it was just bananas with when Ricky was wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd loves him. They were chanting new champ.
So he's still so over. It's great.
And yeah. It's great. Again, someone that watched him, you know, I'm in my early 40s. I watched him as, you know, a little kid, you know, teaming with Robert Gibson, one of the greatest tag teams, especially babyface tags of that era.
Oh, yeah.
Fast forward now, I'm talking almost 40 years, and he's still wrestling, people cheering for him, rock and roll. It's really great to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it will be great to see Psycho Love against Camille and Tom Latimer coming up live, NWA Power. That'll be available on YouTube, as I said before, 6:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on January 31st. As I said earlier, Justin and I will be covering that show on our episode in February, first week of February. Before we let you guys go, and thank you so much for your time, do you have any plugs?
You got it?
Twitter at actual A-Love, Instagram A-Love, the number 4Life222.
Yeah, same with me. It's Instagram at LOKEYS910, Twitter, same thing, and youtube.com/psychoboyfodder. There'll be many, many free matches there if you want to go check them out.
And I have an exclusive content website too, angelinaforever.com.
Thank you so much. You can check them out there and check them out on NWA Power again, January 31st. Thank you to MJK Public Relations for helping us set up that interview. And again, we will be talking about that live NWA Power on next week's Wrestling Coast to Coast. This week, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be talking about Prestige Wrestling's Any Given Saturday, which took place on January 21st, 2023. It aired on IWTV. Your commentators are K-Mall, Val Capone, and Dave Prazak made an appearance. Your opening match, well, I should get to before we started the opening match, the crowd was chanting Man Up in honor of the late Jay Briscoe. And in the ring, two men who encountered Jay Briscoe during their times in Ring of Honor, Davey Richards and Tyler Bateman. This match was, I looked at it as mainly a tribute to Jay Briscoe. His theme music played before and after the match, and the crowd chanted Man Up. It was a good contest between both men. Both veterans know their way around the ring. And went outside for a while, came back in. Davey Richards ended up winning with an ankle lock in 13 minutes and 8 seconds. I thought it was a good opener. They pointed to the sky to pay tribute to Jay Briscoe at the end.
Yeah, I thought this was a very strong match, one of the strongest matches on the show, and one of the better Bateman matches I've seen. Davey Richards is always great, so I can't particularly say this was like his strongest match, but it was a very good match. I thought it was a lot of... the announcer Kincaid, he really sold it as very like a very stiff match, which I didn't think it was all that stiff, although it's like sometimes stiffness in the arena doesn't carry over to television. But I thought it was a really good technical exhibition of moves. I thought you know, it was a lot of Davey's sort of technical, almost MMA style wrestling. Like one point, Bateman tried to kick in the corner. Well, obviously, Davey, of course, had to – when he threw the kick in the corner, Davey had to work in his dreaded rope-assisted dragon screw leg whip he does every match. Davey, at one point, he missed a double stomp, but he still managed to put Bateman in an ankle lock, the kind where you use your feet, not your hands, which I think has some other name, but they just called it an ankle lock. Bateman reversed the DDT into like a Jay Briscoe style neck breaker for a two count. Bateman tried a rolling elbow and then a tombstone pile driver, but Richards was able to reverse that into the regular ankle lock you use with your hands. Like you said, Richards got the ankle lock finally and got the tap out. It was just, like I said, I thought it was just a very well scientifically executed match, a very nice tribute to Jay Briscoe, a good deal all around.
Second match on the show, of all two wrestlers that we had seen previously or we've discussed previously here on Wrestling Coast to Coast. It was B-Boy versus Jordynne Cruz. This was billed as a teacher versus student matchup, and B-Boy, being the teacher, had the advantage for most of it. Seemed to be getting the better of Jordynne Cruz. Jordynne Cruz is a very big man, and he still does moves over the top, flying moves, even though a man of his size. Though he was, I wouldn't say dominated, but B-Boy did have control of most of the match. He actually was able to put Jordynne Cruz in a choke, but Cruz is able to roll through and pin B-Boy in 11 minutes and 49 seconds. They showed mutual respect for each other after the match. They shook hands, and B-Boy pointed to the sky again in honor of Jay Briscoe, someone who he had tangled with earlier in his career. I enjoyed this match as well. Jordynne Cruz is your winner.
This new year, you've got goals, and Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of them. Save time and have the energy you need to tackle everything on your to-do list with Factor's ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. No food prep, just microwave in 2 minutes, and you're good to go. Get Factor and not only skip the trip to the grocery store or the hassle of ordering for home delivery, skip the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Each meal has all the ingredients you need to feel satisfied all day long. The key to that is quality ingredients packed with nutrients, not empty calories. I am big on nutrient density food and skipping empty calories. So head to go.factor75.com/Wade and use code Wade60 to get 60% off your first box. That's code Wade60 at go.factor75.com/Wade60 to get 60% off your first box.
Yeah, I really like the story of this match. Like you said, we saw B-Boy just a few weeks ago when we reviewed Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. He's a 25-year vet. I think they said he started in 1997, so coming up on 26 years. And he's still very good. And like Cruz has sort of a gladiator gimmick. He's called the modern-day Spartan, and he wears what we think of as like a gladiator shoulder thing to the ring. This was actually, they said it was B-Boy's debut in Prestige Wrestling, even though he's, been a West Coast fixture for a long time. Like you said, B-Boy dominated a lot. Oddly, it started with Cruz sort of outsmarting B-Boy despite being the student. He sent him to the floor with a Frankensteiner. B-Boy at one point did like a chop, but he was so cocky. Jordynne was able to come back, but then B-Boy calmly dropped him with just a right to the face. And that was really when B-Boy started taking over. Cruz couldn't get his footing back from that. I thought that was, a nice touch because Cruz is like this young guy. He's still learning, and B-Boy knows all the tricks. It was kind of weird. Like Cruz did his Olympus slam, which is like an Olympic slam. But kind of like a back suplex instead of the sideway. And he also did a brainbuster over the knee and a frog splash for a two count. At one point, Cruz tried another splash, but B-Boy was like playing possum because he's still the teacher. And James Kincaid noted he'll be lucky if that picture perfect face doesn't chip a tooth. The Prestige setup is very weird in general, I think, because you have the wrestlers enter on a stage that's level with the ring, and on one side, but so only three sides of the ring are lowered, and on one side of those, the fans stand right up against it, but just the one side. So it's really peculiar. I think it would be hard to plan a match that way, but the other guys did it. So at the end here, which I thought was weird, but I grew to like it. Cruz did his warrior call, his finisher. It's like a springboard thing into a stunner, and it only got two. And I was like, I don't know. I think if you're going to have the student go over, maybe just pin him. He should probably get to win with his finisher. But instead, he got to do not quite a slip on a banana peel finish, but, just sort of I don't want to say a fluke win, but just a – he maneuvered his way. Basically, he outsmarted B-Boy. You know, B-Boy had the choke and Cruz flipped backwards. I liked it because it made sense to me. The more I thought about it, it was a way to show like the student still had stuff to learn, but he was able to outsmart his teacher this one time, so it could set up a future match down the road or just show sign of respect. There were also several crazy bumps from Cruz in this match. And yeah, I thought this was also a pretty good deal.
The third match on the show was the World Class Wrecking Crew against Los Savacitos, who we just saw a few weeks ago on West Coast Pro Wrestling. This match was interesting to me in the fact that the West Coast Wrecking Crew were babyfaces. Again, we saw them on the West Coast Pro Wrestling show as heels. We've seen them on New Japan Strong as heels. And here, they were just like lovable babyfaces. And Los Savacitos were these heels who, even though they were smaller, were dastardly and would do whatever it takes to win. Fortunately, they weren't able to do enough. The West Coast Wrecking Crew won with Royce Isaacs hitting a springboard cutter. West Coast Wrecking Crew, say it slowly so I don't stutter. The West Coast Wrecking Crew are your winners in 13 minutes and 22 seconds.
Yeah, it was sort of a weird deal to me for a couple reasons. Like you said, we saw Los Suavecitos do a run-in and take out the conglomerate on West Coast Pro, but and they made reference to that on this show, and Los Suavecitos were like booed out of the building when they came out, and the announcer credited that heel heat to the attack. So it's like Prestige and West Coast are kind of sharing continuity, but like you said, not all the way, because West Coast Wrecking Crew were heels there and faces here, and there's another sort of like odd heel face switch that happens later in the show. But I don't know. I thought it was weird. This was Suavecito's like big debut in Prestige, and they lost. In particular, if they're going to be regulars here, you would think they would start with a big win. Like, now they're sort of behind the eight ball. I get it. Like, if they're just a visiting team here only one time, but to not, I don't know. I just thought it was weird. They wouldn't go over if they're going to set up anything with them down the road. I don't know. I couldn't get a good read on their working ability. I thought a lot of their moveset was like kicks and just punches, but I'm not sure if they were doing that just to be heels and to make West Coast Wrecking Crew shine better as the faces, or they just don't have a lot of moves in their holsters. But I thought they had good personas and carried themselves very well. So they at least have the personality down. The match itself, I thought it was a little long. I don't know. Yeah, that's about it. The match was okay. It like you said, it was interesting. West Coast Wrecking Crew just be like these Superman baby faces to the crowd. But yeah, I don't know what to make of Suavecitos yet.
Yeah, I think it's good to see range from a tag team. Again, we're used to them being heels, but it's good to show that they can actually be baby faces, so, you know, more versatility for them. They were actually announced that they will be on the New Japan show in San Jose on Fight TV coming up in a few weeks. They will actually be wrestling the Motor City Machine Guns for the New Japan Strong Tag Team titles.
Wow.
A match that maybe we'll review here on our show.
Always possible.
We'll see as the schedule allows, or at least for VIP.
Yes.
After that match, kind of when for me the show a little less enjoyable. The next match was Evil Uno versus Jacob Fatu. I think this is the second or third time we've seen Evil Uno, who begins the match by trying to get a handshake with someone. You know, Jacob Fatu obliged, then he got hit anyway. Not a man I think you want to turn on Jacob Fatu. Anyway, they're having this match. Fatu ends up bumping the ref. He brings in a chair. A new ref comes in. He just kind of waves his arms around, almost like he's bringing in a plane. while Fatu and Uno fight over using the chair. Uno suplexes Fatu onto the chair and goes for the pin, and that's when the referee goes for the bell. After the match, Evil Uno pile drove the referee, and him and Fatu brawled at the back. This was a double disqualification in 15 minutes and 31 seconds. I thought this finish was ridiculous for many reasons. One, why didn't the referee just, you know, call for the bell immediately? Why did he let them wrestle? Why did he only do that when Evil Uno went for a pin? If they never went for a pin, would he have still just let them fight? You may have a true fight forever situation. And yeah, I can understand why there was not a finish in this match to contracted televised wrestlers. But yeah, I just thought this not a good finish, and it marred the match for me.
Need an extra dose of positivity in your wrestling podcasts? Well, come join me, Alan Forel, over in the Pro Wrest Paradise at PW Torch VIP as we bask on the bright side of wrestling and focus on some of the great matches and shows from around the world, be it the US, Japan, Europe, or Mexico. There's always a place for wrestling's past in the Paradise too, and we've done fun historical shows such as the We Love Liger series, celebrating the glorious career of Jushin Thunder Liger, and our I Was There When shows, where a guest will join me to talk about a classic bout that they were in attendance for. We love variety, and you can expect lots of it at the Pro Wrest Paradise. Detailed PW Torch VIP subscription information and a list of all the VIP benefits is available at pwtorchvipinfo.com. And yes, all VIP podcasts are compatible with popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android devices, or you can stream them directly from our ad-free VIP mobile site. See you in the paradise.
Yeah, it was not a good finish. The match is okay. I think I like Uno a little more than you do. He's pretty much a comedy wrestler, and I don't mean that as an insult. He just does a lot of comedy bits, but we saw him in Dreamcast? I forget.
Dreamwave.
Thank you. Yes, we saw him in Dreamwave. Our complaint about his match there was it went too long, and this match also I thought went too long for a lot of the same comedy spots that Uno did in that match. Like, you know, the really wants a handshake, and then as soon as he gets it, he sucker punches the guy. So, which you said, it's not something I would do with Jacob Fatu. Just didn't seem smart. Uno, early on, he did a Rana, which I thought was pretty impressive for a guy his size. It didn't look great. Like, I wasn't sure he was going to make it all the way, and I think Fatu had to help. They also did the spot where Fatu did a dive to the outside, and it took out Uno, and he took out somebody else, too, and I'm not sure who he got. I really hope it was not a fan and it was just somebody at ringside. They never really drew attention to it after that, but I was a little freaked out for that guy. So they brawled around ringside quite a bit, at which point Kincaid quipped, "Never say Prestige doesn't present fan-friendly wrestling. You can come home with Jacob Fatu and Evil Uno sweat all over you," which is kind of a gross statement. Not sure it's a selling point for indie wrestling. Uno jumped off the top rope, but Fatu caught him sort of and slammed him on the floor. It really wasn't as smooth as it could have been. Uno caught Fatu in the back of the head when Fatu did a springboard, and then Uno did a swanton for two. I really like that. I thought like the way Uno kicked him in the back of the head on the handstand was great. Like you said, they brawled quite a bit, and then yeah, I didn't love the ending. Like you said, I figured it was like, oh, it was a cop out finish specifically because they're two guys who, and neither one could really do the fall based on the contract situation. But they brawled so much to the back, like it wasn't just like, oh, we had a non finish and they shook hands. Like, they kept fighting, so it really felt like the setup for a rematch down the road, which I don't think we're gonna get, but it definitely left a loose end there. I don't know. We'll have to see if they announce something later. It's really, like you said, it's funny. Like, we've seen Uno twice recently after I don't think we've ever seen him at all. And We're going to cover a Revolver show in a couple weeks that actually I will be at live, and he's going to be on that one too. So suddenly we're being flooded with Evil Uno matches.
That looks to be the case. I should also mention, I think I mentioned this for the West Coast Pro show, but yeah, the announcer, this is it. This is when the person wins on every match was way over the top. The fifth match was a no rules, anything goes hardcore match between Shunma, Kasumada, and Sonico. Not my kind of match, typically, but Sonico did win with a BMF through a Lego-covered door in 16 minutes and 56 seconds.
Okay, I also am not a fan of these kind of matches, and I thought this one... I really did not care for this match. It's super weird. So, like, Shunma is coming from... He's a visitor from the DDT promotion in Japan. But his whole deal, he's like this happy-go-lucky but super violent guy. And he comes out carrying a big container of Legos, which I have to wonder if the corporate company of Lego knows that their little bricks are suddenly part of this guy's ultra-violent gimmick. And I can't imagine they'd be super happy with that. But it's probably flying under their radar. And the whole Lego thing is dumb, in my opinion. Like, it was like a weird sort of comedy spot in violent matches. Like, everyone stepped on a Lego once in their life. Chris, you have little kids, so you have years to look forward to being crippled by Legos to the feet. So, like, everyone knew, like... Yes. Probably you're still just on Duplos now, right?
Yeah. That's where we are.
Their larger cousin... Safer cousin. Everyone knows like Legos hurt, so it's like one silly spot in the match, but this whole match is built around these stupid Legos. Like immediately Shunma offers Sonico a crate of Legos and they whack them open at each other. And so it's like, what are you gonna do? Like that should be like that's like dumping thumbtacks out immediately too, you know? It's like Once the cat's out of the bag like that, like how are you going to build a match if that's not like sort of your climatic spot? Instead, no, they both took bumps into Legos early, and that's like the only thing they were good for. But now the whole ring's covered in Legos, and they even know that like fans brought extra Legos, which I think's nuts because Legos aren't cheap either. And it's one thing to like throw money if you really appreciated something, but to be spending your money on Legos, you'll never get back. I don't think that's smart. Anyway, I will say a weapon that's much near and dear to my heart, the gusset plate made an appearance. The gusset plate, it's a steel square, or sometimes it can be like an L-shaped thing, but it's got like a ton of spikes on one side. It's used to hold like pieces of lumber together, or it's used in construction. Well, we first saw one probably a year ago. I had to look up what a gusset plate was. Since then, I see it everywhere I go. Now in construction, I know to look for it. It's always exciting to me. And sure enough, the gusset plate, which should have been the star of this match instead of these dumb Legos, it got used a ton. They were hammering into each other's arms, into their heads. It's sick stuff. I can't unironically like approve of it, but if you're a guy who's promoting gusset plate usage, I thought that was the only part I really liked about this match. They fought all over. It was so long too. That was the other thing. Like I got so bored watching this match. I actually like started flipping through my phone at one point. They fought upstairs to a balcony. They're teasing, throwing each other off, but you know, they're not going to do that because they're not that crazy. Instead they opted to staple various things to each other's heads, which is maybe as crazy as throwing someone off a balcony. I'm not really sure. They finally got back in the ring. There was more Lego There were more Lego bumps. It's true. At one point I did see something I've never seen before, which was a wrestler set up a door bridge with a bunch of Legos stuck in his back. They're bleeding from these Legos from their backs and their heads. Katsumura did this crazy swan dive into that door bridge. The dive was nuts because it looked like he was going to do a header until like he flipped at the very last second. I will say it was a beautiful dive, if nothing else. I felt bad for the ref who had to count with a ring full of Legos. She was wearing gloves. Hopefully they were padded because I hate to smack my palm into these hard plastic things. You know, finally they fought on the top. Sonico missed the Chuma and did a superplex through a door covered with the Legos and got the pin. Yeah, like I said, I thought this was too long. I can't believe they had a whole weapons match with Legos as the centerpiece. The only things I liked were seeing my old friend the Gusset Plate and Katsumura's beautiful if crazy dive.
One way that you can help us sustain our schedule of putting out podcasts throughout the week is by giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Just go to Apple Podcasts and look for our Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and give us a 5-star rating. We hope you think we've earned that score with our fast turnaround times and our quantity and quality of wrestling analysis throughout the week. So take a moment out for us and do us a favor and give us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts. That helps us on search returns and helps us grow. And if you want, you can add a few comments about what you like about the programs in the comments section. Thank you so much.
Also, because I know Chris watched this late, I actually watched this live. So there was a break after this while they cleaned up the Legos and the blood in the ring. And so they're going through, like, this is on IWTV. They're just doing commercials for all the shows. And every once in a while, they'll do like they would have a quick spot that's like missing Cruel. If you've seen him, please contact IWTV. So Cruel was the second to last IWTV champion. He was injured in a match against somebody, I forget who, and that's why the belt was vacated and they had to, you know, have that gauntlet match to crown the champ. So obviously that's going to be a storyline they're going forward. So I thought this was a cool way to like kind of keep that storyline going.
That's good to know that they're moving that forward on IWTV. Good to know that everyone got a break to clean up the Legos and the blood.
Yes.
After that break, it was Robert Martyr versus Kid Bandit. I will say the work in the ring was fine. What was really confusing about this match was the storyline. So, again, we haven't watched all Prestige shows. We did see, I think back in September, Kid Bandit wrestle Malakai Black with Malakai Black winning. And the storyline, at least according to what the commentators were saying, was that Kid Bandit had come under the spell of Malakai Black and was now going under a different name.
Oh, it's more than that, if I may. I rewatched it so I could repeat exactly what was said.
Okay, go ahead.
The Kid Bandit, this is from James Kincaid, the announcer. The Kid Bandit we've come to know and love has not really been Kid Bandit, but a digital creation of a corporation known as Bandit Corp, designed to find and dissect data of all the top wrestling stars in the world. But when Kid Bandit lost to Malakai Black, something broke in the Bandit Corp design. Something was poisoned. And since then, a rogue AI has broken free in a fight against Bandit Corp. Now, the shell of a vessel you see before you is not Kid Bandit, but said vessel has been repurposed by Bandit Corp with the intent of hunting down this rogue AI. Kid Bandit believes Robert Martyr is harboring said rogue AI.
So, yeah, that sounds like a great description.
The weird part is, like, so, yeah, the other thing, if you, like, sift through it, you're like, oh, okay, Kid Bandit lost their mind, and Robert Martyr's trying to help them, right?
Yes.
But that's not really what the story of the match was.
No, the story of the match was Robert Martyr was a heel getting booed. Kid Bandit was getting cheered. And I know that, you know, I say, you know, we do a show every week covering independent wrestling, as you all know, because you're listening to it. And, you know, we watch, you know, we've gone to a few shows live. We'll go to some more this year. But, you know, you have a different perspective of anything from the people in the crowd to the people who are watching at home, hearing the commentary. You know, the commentary did not match what was going on in the match, and it just made for a really odd experience. because Robert Martin was being booed even after the description that you made with Kid Bandit now being a corporation.
Yes.
Hunting. Either way, Kid Bandit won with the dance of the Fire God in 13 minutes and 33 seconds. This was, again, the work, the storyline was fine. It just didn't match what the commentary was talking about, and it led to some confusion on my part. Sounds like yours and probably a few others who are watching the show.
It's true. This once again continues maybe one of the great mysteries of wrestling coast to coast. Is Kid Bandit good? And I can't say that I know for sure. I think they're a good worker. They have a lot of presence in the ring. I will say that. I think they're very unique in their gimmick. And this turn is, I think, too unique. And I thought it felt like the story they were telling definitely distracted me from like trying to figure out what was going on in the match, because I was trying to figure out what the heck they were talking about. Yeah, I still know. I think maybe this is a rare case where a wrestling story was overthought. But yeah, like you said, I actually liked a lot of the moves here. Bandit at one point did the Malakai Black like cross-legged sit down and taunt their opponent. They did a really cool move. It was like the 619, but they actually, or Tiger Faint Kick, I guess is the proper name for it, but they swung forward, so they hit Robert Martyr in the back of the head and then swang backwards to do the routine 619. I thought that was really cool. Bandit originally they went for the Dance of the Fire God, but Martyr was able to reverse that into a really cool German suplex, and then a scary looking sit out power bomb. At that point, when they kicked out of that, Kincaid said, Bandit Corps is rebooted. They've found the system update in a big way, which I rolled my eyes at. Martyr screamed something at Bandit at one point that made the crowd ooh, but I couldn't really tell what Martyr had said. Bandit instead finally hit this Dance of the Fire God and then did Kota Ibushi's Kamigoye. Martyr stood up and slapped Bandit, but Bandit hit the second Dance of the Fire God, got the pin. Yeah, like you said, I think the work is good. I'm leaning towards Kid Bandit is a good wrestler, but I don't know. The jury is still out. I think it's a storyline we will pursue as Wrestling Coast to Coast continues.
Also important to note that Kid Bandit's starting out their career, so definitely time to improve wherever they are at this point anyway. Seventh match on the show was Mao. Was it Mao? Am I saying that right?
I think it's Mao.
Mao versus Kevin Blackwood. This was probably my favorite match on the show. It kind of stuck out being more of a, for lack of better words, traditional indie match, you know, trading chops, trading kicks, hitting moves. Mao ended up winning with the spin kick in 13:23. But if there was one match I would definitely recommend to check out, it would be this one. Mao, your winner again in 13:23.
Yeah, I've noticed on Twitter that there are clips of this match floating around Twitter, and particularly a move where Mao did a Hurricane Rana and then popped up and then jumped from the ring apron onto the top rope and did a 450, which they called the Golden Star Press. It was a stunning and beautiful move. I've seen GIFs of it, or GIFs all over Twitter. And I'm not even on Twitter that much. It seems to be like the big move from the indie weekend. So I would tell people to seek that out at the least, because it was very pretty. Yeah, like you, this was my favorite match on the show. Interestingly, the West Coast Pro Show we did a couple weeks ago, Kevin Blackwood turned heel in a big way against Starboy Charlie. That heel turn has not taken effect here in Prestige Wrestling. This was a total face versus face match, which really wouldn't have bothered me except Los Suavecitos their storyline was seemed to be have carried over from West Coast Pro, and this one didn't. So it's like, do these companies share continuity or not? You know, it's kind of weird. But yeah, I really love this match. Mal did like a beautiful lion salt to the floor, quebrada to the floor. It was pretty, but I was like, oh, these poor prestige people, they're up and down. They have to abandon their chairs 10 times a show. And, you know, at this point, I'd be so tired, I couldn't get up. They laid into each other with some hard back kicks. Mal did the classic Ted DiBiase style fist drop where you kind of just fall. It's like falling away. I don't know. It's lacking in modern wrestling because it's so cool and so cool looking. Not even as a finisher, just something to do. Mal dropped a knee in the midsection and then he somersaulted backwards into an abdominal stretch, which was super cool. And I'm not even a guy who like loves the abdominal stretch, but the way he was applying it just out of nowhere was really awesome. Blackwood laid into Mal with some kicks, and Blackwood got Mal in a waist lock, but Mal shimmied out, which isn't something you see every day. Which, and also I was like, ooh, Effie should 100% steal that move. We got, like you said, we got the standard chop off is in I chop you and then dare you to chop me, which I've rallied against sometimes. This is the only one on the show, so I was okay with it. I think once the show is enough, but other than that, it can be overkill. Mal absolutely won it. However, like Blackwood was just staggered from these chops. That was, and after that was the beautiful, the Golden Star Press I described earlier. Mal did a crazy looking Michinoku driver. It looked like he dropped Blackwood right on his neck. And so Blackwood repaid it with a scary running Death Valley driver. But Mal bridged out of the cover, to which Kincaid said, "This guy belongs in Toy Story. He's so slinky." That was a pretty good line. Blackwood responded by kicking Mal right in the face, leading to some real stiff kicks from both guys. Finally, Mal won with his own spin kick. I always feel bad. Kevin Blackwood, like, it seems like he's this guy. Anytime you need someone to put a visiting star over, Blackwood is the guy who's going to end up counting the lights. And I thought that was going to be rectified with this heel turn he did at West Coast Pro, but he's still here doing the job for Mal. That said, the match was awesome. Like, I'd never seen Mal before. I thought he looked great. There's a lot of crazy stiffness and a lot of really exciting moves. And I would hope to see more of Mal because I really was very impressed by him.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The last match on the show was for the Ring of Honor Women's World title. Your champion is Athena versus Miyu Yamashita. Now, this match I actually thought was on pace to be the best match on the show. I was really enjoying it. I do like Athena's heel character as Ember Moon. She's kind of a, you know, lovable baby face. Same as when she first started in AEW. She's now being kind of a vicious heel. But this was probably, I mean, this, I, you know, I complain a lot about the evil Uno Jacob Fatu finish. I probably like this one even less. So Yamashita pins Athena. Her foot is under the rope, clear as day. But not only is her foot under the rope for the three count, the referee never goes for the ring bell, doesn't signal for anything. The referee, you know, female referee Scarlett Dolvin, is waving her arms the entire time. Like, nope, her foot is on the rope, this match should continue. The commentators are going over the top, talking about Yamashita changing the wrestling world by winning this title. The locker room emptied out so quickly You thought there was a fire in the locker room. How quickly they got out there. And I thought to myself, at no point was it clear at all that there was a finish. The bell didn't ring. The referee didn't indicate it. At best, in reality, she was indicating that this match was not over. So this is completely ridiculous. Athena used this opportunity to play possum. Yamashita was fighting over the bell with Donovan when Donovan said, you know, obviously the match was still going. In the confusion, Athena hit Yamashita with the belt and won in 20 minutes and 59 seconds. I enjoyed the match, but the finish, my goodness. Justin?
So is this what, would you consider this a Dusty finish?
No, because the Dusty finish, like, one of the classic Dusty finishes, Starrcade 87, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson against the Road Warriors was, you would throw someone over the top rope to be disqualified, and then they'd wrestle for a little bit, and you'd forget about it, and then there'd be a pin, and you'd be so happy that when the referee came back and said, oh, by the way, this happened, so you can't win. You know, the second referee who was on the outside.
Yeah.
This, you never had the joy of winning because the referee never, who counted the pin at the time, indicated that the pin was not legal. There was never, you know, it was ridiculous how quickly the commentators were celebrating or how quickly the locker room emptied out. You know, how much wrestling have we watched over the years, seeing people getting beat up for what seemed to be like an eternity and no one coming out? But to celebrate a turn or celebrate a title change for the Ring of Honor world title on a prestige wrestling show, people were sprinting out there like Usain Bolt. It was just, it was over the top. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a variation on the Dusty finish, but yeah, it's not I think the technical Dusty finish, but I, like you, I was, the finish really took this match down. I thought it had really good psychology up to that point. Yeah, and I'm really impressed with Athena's heel character. Like you, she shows just a lot, I think much more charisma than she did as a babyface. And I liked her as a babyface, but she's really good, like doing a lot of clowning, like Yamashita would try to do a test of strength, but Athena would just sort of clown around about it. And then they finally locked up, and Mayu kicked her in the legs a lot until she dropped. So, you know, she's obviously like selling for the face, making them look good. And it was strong psychology. I like, actually, Athena. This was very unique. It's something I never really seen before. Athena pulled the apron in the ring, and Mayu. You didn't really think about it. It's like, what? That's a weird thing to do. And instead, Yamashita is like standing on the ring apron, and Athena pulls it out from under her, which I'd never seen anybody get heat that way before. And then before we were taping this show, I was watching AEW tonight, and what do I see in the Buddy Matthews, Darby Allin TNT title match? But the ring apron is pulled in the ring, and Matthews pulls it out from Darby Allin's legs to get heat. So coincidence, maybe, or maybe these guys really like this match. I'm not sure. It's a good spot, and it's unusual. In this case, Mayu like hurt her knee, and it allowed Athena to do a lot of leg work through the match, which is really good. Yamashita at one point did an awesome running kick, but Athena reversed that pin into the crucifix. I was hoping that was the finish, but alas, it only got two. They fought on the apron, but Athena ran Mayu into the post and dropped her back first on the apron. That looked pretty nasty. Like you, I really did not like the finish. I think as a viewer, I knew like there's no way Mayu Yamashita is going to beat Athena for the Ring of Honor title on a non-Ring of Honor show. So I'm not even sure why would you do this finish if it was for the prestige title? There's at least a chance such a thing could happen, so I could get swallowed up into the suspension of disbelief. But you knew from the start Athena was going to walk out with the belt, so I think to even tease something like that was foolish. And like you said, the way it was handled wasn't great at all because the ref was like immediately waving off. Why couldn't Yamashita understand what was happening? Like she looked like such an idiot. She got in a tug of war over the belt with the ref that the ref was winning. How strong is this referee that a professional wrestler can't pull the belt from her hands? And then she gets clocked with the belt and pinned, so she looks like a dummy. I did like the ring announcer's the disappointment in his voice as he announced Athena was the winner. That would help sell like whatever was going on in the match. But like you said, this was a very strong match with kind of a crappy finish.
And that was Prestige Wrestling, Any Given Saturday. What were your overall thoughts on the show? We've seen a lot of Prestige Wrestling matches. I'll have to say this probably was not my favorite show I've seen from them. I think a lot of it was really the finishes. I don't know if it was a desire to be creative, overly creative in some ways, or just sort of, you know, things not clicking. I thought the show was not my favorite, though. You know, we've watched other Prestige shows in the past and have enjoyed them, so I wouldn't give up on the promotion. Just wasn't my favorite show.
Yeah, like you, this is one of the weaker Prestige shows, probably the weakest Prestige show I've seen. We had two pretty bad finishes, the Evil Uno Jacob Fatu match, and then the main event. I thought both those matches, they were marred by their finish. The Sonico match, it was too long for what it was. I thought I really like that Mal Kevin Blackwood match. That's the only match I'm like, man, people should go see that match. So it was a weaker show, and also there was no real direction coming out of this. They didn't set up, I don't think they really set up any match unless there's going to be a Evil Uno Jacob Fatu match rematch down the line, but they didn't. There's no sense of direction going forward. Like that West Coast Pro show we saw a couple weeks ago, they set up matches for the next two shows, and we don't know anything coming out of Prestige after this show.
Yeah, I think the ironic thing is, you know, we did cover a Prestige show. They had a show on the East Coast, part of the Restival, and they mentioned that the Prestige champion would wrestle, that's Alex Shelley, would wrestle his, Alex Shelley, excuse me, talking too quickly, would wrestle his Motor City Machine Gun tag team partner, Chris Sabin, at a forthcoming show. So that is something to look forward to down the line. But yeah, as I said, it wasn't, you know, I think, you know, we talk about it pretty much every week. We do these independent shows, you know, how are you buying people in if they've only seen, this is the first show that they've seen of your promotion. How do you get them to watch subsequent shows? And I don't know if they did a great job doing that, but we have had a good time watching Prestige Wrestling. It is one of my favorite independent promotions. So we will call it an off night, and we will see them again down the road.
I know they've already announced they're going to have a big show over WrestleMania weekend in the WrestleMania area, as probably many West Coast promotions are. So that'll be a big weekend for them.
Yeah, that'll be a big time for us. There'll be a lot of matches to cover. Yes. I think that's the last weekend of March, if I'm days correctly.
I think is it first weekend in April?
Is that the same? Is it the same thing? Is it like March 31st?
Actually, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a calendar for me. But anyway, there will be a lot of independent matches. The Collective has been announced by GCW.
It is that. So WrestleMania is – so Saturday is the 1st, and I think, yeah, like the Prestige show is like the 30th or 31st.
So WrestleMania is out in Los Angeles. There will be a lot of shows that we will be talking about. We'll figure out – I don't know, there are probably too many to cover, so we'll figure out a neat way to cover a lot of the great action that we'll see. There should be quite a lot of stuff that weekend, as there is every WrestleMania weekend.
I mean, I'm excited because the West Coast has a very strong indie scene, as you know, you and I have discovered. And I know, like, that weekend, you'll get indie wrestlers from all over probably coming in. But I think it'll be a really good chance for a lot of the West Coast guys to shine that we know about but haven't gotten a big spotlight, like Kevin Blackwood and probably Nick Wayne, I assume, and Titus Alexander, Jordan Cruz, guys like that.
As we mentioned earlier in our interview with Psycho Love, today for our VIP matches, we will be watching a match with one of our all-time favorites, Ricky Morton, as he wrestled Tony Deppen in GCW over the weekend. We will also be talking, we will be reviewing a match between Anthony Henry and Adam Priest for the Action Wrestling Championship. We've talked about a few matches in their feud, and they're having a no ropes, or they had a no ropes, no disqualification match. So we will talk about that for VIP listeners.
Spoiler, it was bananas.
It certainly was. But before we go to that, Justin, do you have any plugs?
Sure. As always, feel free to contact us at torchcoasttocoast@gmail.com. If you have any comments, issues, if you have opinions on the Best Picture nominees or anything, or why Legos are a good or bad weapon in professional wrestling, any other thing you want to talk about, matches or promotions you'd like to check out, or you'd like us to check out, we would love to hear from you. So feel free to drop us a line at torchcoasttocoast@gmail.com. I am on Twitter at jmcclelland1, JMCCLELLAND1.
And I'm on Twitter at Mind of Maitland. I need to tweet more about soccer. You know, Newcastle's doing well in the Premier League. The New York Red Bulls season will be starting soon in MLS on February 25th. So I'll do that. I'll tweet about wrestling too, especially these great independent matches that we're going to see. Obviously, as we said before, next week we'll be talking about NWA Power, their first live show. But this week we're going to talk about, for our VIP members, matches from GCW and Action Wrestling. To hear us talk about that, you have to be a VIP member. To become one, check out membership info at pwtorch.com/govip, where the daily casts are presented with ads and plugs removed, plus VIP exclusive content, 30 plus years of newsletter archives, 15 plus years of podcast archives, and hundreds of retro radio shows from the 1990s, plus daily VIP exclusive podcasts, a new weekly newsletter, and an ad-free web browsing experience. Again, that's pwtorch.com/govip. For Justin McClelland, I'm Chris Maitland. Thank you, AMR. And thank you to all of our listeners on our daily cast. We'll be back next week to talk about NWA Power live. But now it is time for VIP.
It's a new year, so why not treat yourself to a PW Torch VIP membership and get these shows with the ads and plugs removed and a ton of VIP exclusive audio shows such as the new Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE series that I record throughout the week, dedicated to a focused look at WWE news and a focused look at AEW News, along with commentary, analysis, and Q&A with VIP member listeners. Plus our post-pay-per-view VIP exclusive roundtables and so much more. Plus over 35 years of archives of podcasts, radio shows, newsletters, articles. Check it out, pwtorch.com/govip. Tells you all about membership. So why not make 2022 the year that you enjoy all the benefits that come with a PW Torch VIP membership? This new year, you've got goals, and Factor is here to help you achieve each and every one of them. Save time and have the energy you need to tackle everything on your to-do list with Factor's ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. No food prep, just microwave in 2 minutes, and you're good to go. Get Factor and not only skip the trip to the grocery store or the hassle of ordering for home delivery, skip the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. I've been a Factor customer for a year. I buy these meals regardless of whether they sponsor this show. and they got me through the holidays. I had the fuel and the healthy meals that I needed for energy and weight maintenance with all the tempting treats at all the Christmas gatherings that I went to. So no matter what your lifestyle or what the season, Factor has the meals to help you live it to the fullest. With keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, and protein plus meals on the menu each week. They're prepared by chefs approved by dietitians. Each meal has all the ingredients you need to feel satisfied all day long. The key to that is quality ingredients packed with nutrients, not empty calories. And that's what Factor meals are all about. And that is why I am a regular consumer of Factor meals. I am big on nutrient density food and skipping empty calories. That means no white flour, no refined sugars, no artificial ingredients. All the best kinds of protein, carbs, and fats that are packed with the nutrients that give you energy and make you feel satisfied so you're not tempted to snack and thus gain weight and then feel dragged down after that sugar spike. With 34 chef-prepared, dietitian-approved weekly options, there's always something new to try. Plus, you can round out your meal and replenish your snack supply with an assortment of over 36 quick bites, smoothies, juices, and other satisfying add-ons. If you're looking to cut back on takeout, Factor is a great option. Not only is Factor cheaper than takeout, but meals are ready quicker than restaurant delivery. When you're hungry and you've got time to eat, you're 2 minutes away with Factor. Eating vegan or veggie is a snap with Factor, and you know that's important for me. Each meal is prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians, so you know your Factor meal has all the ingredients you want and nothing you don't. And if you're looking to mix it up, you can add additional protein to select vegan and veggie meals each week. So get Factor and enjoy clean eating without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Again, ready in just 2 minutes. There's really no easier way to eat well. Achieve and maintain your goals this new year with Factor. Get America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit and start saving time, eating well, and living your best year ever. So head to go.factor75.com/Wade and use code Wade60 to get 60% off your first box. That's code Wade60 at go.factor75.com/Wade60 to get 60% off your first box. Go.factor75.com/Wade60.